Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am introducing a new company to, I believe, all of you who are listening. This company was introduced to me by Mark Chandler. So I chat with Mark Chandler pretty much every Friday, and he introduced me to this company saying, since you're so focused on resources, you really need to be talking to this company as they are looking to standardize how diamonds are traded and make an open market for diamond trading. The company is Diamond Standard. I'm chatting with the founder and CEO, Cormac Kinney. Now, Cormac, I don't really want to explain this whole process because I think you do it better than me. So in terms of what the goals are behind Diamond Standard as a company, as I said, you're trying to really bring diamonds into a more open and tradable world and market to investors. Give us a little rundown of the overall strategy here, how you're going to bring diamonds to more of the mainstream investors.
Well, thanks, Corey. It's great to be on the program. First of all, diamonds are a really interesting natural resource that's been really left behind. Every other precious metal, for example, has a place in the world's portfolios, especially with institutional investors. Gold, silver, platinum, palladium, these are great stores of wealth. They're a great hedge against volatility. They're uncorrelated to stocks and bonds. And especially at this stage, which a lot of us think is the beginning of a commodity supercycle, you want to have commodities in a portfolio. But diamonds have been left behind because they're never standardized. They're not fungible. Nobody knows what a diamond is worth. You have to sell it, and there's extreme friction every time you try to find a buyer for a diamond. And because of this lack of transparency, extreme friction, there's no exchange, an institutional investor could never buy or sell a diamond. We set out to solve that. And my thesis, which has now been proven, was that it was a computer science problem. And Diamond Standard is the producer of the world's first and only regulator-approved fungible diamond commodity. We make a coin and a bar, and the breakthrough is that every coin, for example, is the same. It has the same geological content and the same market price. And like gold, we don't set that market price. The market does.
So Cormac, when it comes to standardizing these diamonds, one of the arguments is every diamond is different. So how is the company going about putting these different diamonds into a coin that is then essentially the same as all the other coins you're producing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's our breakthrough. Diamonds, if you've never bought one, vary widely, and they're nonlinear, which means as a diamond becomes larger, as it becomes more colorless, like you may have heard of decolor, as it becomes more flawless, its price goes up geometrically. You can't just say if it's double the weight, it's double the price. It might be four times the price. And these curves of carat weight, color, and clarity determine the value of a diamond. The design of our commodity is unique in that it can contain a huge number of diamonds of every variety of carat weight, color, and clarity. In fact, about 16 million different varieties of diamonds. Because we can use every diamond, we're able to be the world's first and only natural market maker for diamonds. What that means is we literally bid on 16 million different varieties of diamonds. That's every combination of carat weight, color, and clarity. And our bids are transparent. They're on a regulated exchange, and they go out to all these diamond vendors. Right now, we have about $10 billion worth of supply on our exchange, the Diamond Standard Exchange. And we're right now in the process of buying 60,000 diamonds. And what we buy are, we can't buy 16 million, but 60,000, for example, we buy in a statistically valid sample of all those diamonds. That sample we make public, so we can always prove to anyone who's interested that the diamonds we bought fairly represent the entire population of 16 million. At the end of the day, that pile of 60,000 diamonds, an optimizer divides into these coins so that every coin receives a fair allocation of that pile of diamonds. So every coin contains the entire range, and on average, they contain the median of the carat weight, color, and clarity of all diamonds. So our product is really a statistical sample of all diamonds and always represents the median. And whether we make the coins on the same day or decades apart, they still contain the same aggregate content because we only care about geology.
All right, let's talk about these coins too, because it's not your standard coin with just a couple diamonds in it. As you mentioned, you have technology that essentially standardizes the type of diamonds that you put into these coins to make them all the same. But these coins are also going to be on the blockchain. They're fully transactionable in terms of trading on the blockchain, also for different types of exchanges, different types of transactions that these coins can go through. Give us a little bit more insight on how these coins can be traded, encompassing the blockchain as well.
Yeah, so a lot of people hear coin and blockchain and they think it's digital. But nope, our coins are real, that you hold them in your hand. They're beautiful. They're a transparent white disc that contains about 10 to 12 diamonds. And those diamonds are sealed in this transparent lucite with a wireless computer chip. The computer chip is under the diamonds, and it does three interesting things. It provides auditing, authentication, and it stores a blockchain token. What that means is while these physical coins are sitting in a vault, like a custodian, like JP Morgan, for example, the owner can trade the token that's integrated into the coin. And by trading the token, they've traded ownership. And it's very much like a vault receipt. You're trading this token. That token allows whoever owns it to take delivery of the physical commodity. Although we don't expect many people to do that. It's much safer to leave it in the vault. If you take it out of the vault, you can still sell the coin face-to-face using your cell phone, but you cannot list it on Binance, for example, and sell the token on an exchange.
Okay, now you mentioned that you guys are the first and only regulator-approved diamond commodity as well. So on top of potentially trading it through the blockchain, you have also opened up futures and options, the physical commodity that is the actual coin, and I understand that ETFs are also pending approval. How does this just further open up the diamond market to bigger, larger institutional investors?
Yeah, so the coin, the physical diamond coin, is the standard commodity, very much like a kilo gold bar is the standard on the LBMA, or a ton of copper is the standard for a CME futures contract. Now that we have a spot commodity, and that spot commodity trades on digital exchanges, we were able to very quickly get approval for securities that are built on top of that spot commodity. So far, we have approval for futures, which will be listed on the CME Globex, and options contracts, which will be listed on the MIAX Options Exchange. We've applied for an ETF that will be listed on the NYSE Arca, and that ETF is pending SEC approval, and it simply owns bars and coins. So it's not controversial like a Bitcoin ETF. It's very much almost identical to the gold ETF. Those securities make it possible for other ETFs to build an allocation, pensions, endowments, and other investors. So over time, we see several inflection points of demand. Initially, the only people who can buy this are investors who are willing to take custody of a coin, physical coin, hold it at a vault, and manage a token. I can tell you a lot of clients don't want to bother. They'd rather just own a share or own an ETF or own a futures contract. But as those securities come online, we expect the demand to grow very, very substantially.
All right, let's talk about how these coins are coming out of the gate. I know that we can dive a lot more into the overall strategy and how you are bringing diamonds now to a wider audience, but I'm going to post a link to the Diamond Standard website so everyone can send me some more questions or topics that they want us to discuss in future interviews. In terms of bringing this coin to market, the company is in the middle, or as I understand, the tail end of its IPO. Selling these coins, it's a $25 million initial offering. Each coin is priced at $5,000, US dollars, that is. How is this IPO progressing, and what's the significance of closing this IPO, but then continuously feeding the market if the demand is there?
Great question. So what's critical to Diamond Standard is that we created a regulator-approved market-based commodity. As part of that, we must never set the price, which would be price fixing. We force the market, A, to tell us the cost of the diamonds through our bidding, right? We raise our bids until someone says yes when we're buying the diamonds. On the commodity side, we never set the market price for the commodity, just like the LBMA establishes a market fix for gold. The digital exchanges that trade our commodity will set the daily fix for our commodity. However, on the first day, there's no commodity to trade. It can't be listed. So we had to set the price. We almost, not arbitrarily, but we set the price initially at $5,000 per coin. In the IPO, we sell the coins, we deliver the tokens, and then we take those proceeds and we're buying the 60,000 diamonds. That buying, that statistical sampling in that from the IPO proceeds will establish the content that must be in every Diamond Standard coin, the geological carat weight, color, and clarity, all factor weighted. Therefore, we're selling these initial coins at cost and using this $25 million initial offering to establish the permanent index. After this offering, we have to buy the exact same statistical sample of diamonds. Those diamonds will cost whatever they cost. And the commodity itself will trade at whatever the market price is for the commodity. We are the agency in the middle. Our job is to buy the diamonds, create the coins. And from our exchange, we collect a 3.5% fee, which is actually a maker-taker model. So that's the net maker-taker fee on the exchange.
Okay, so that's how you guys make your money. But in terms of, I guess, people buying these coins, starting this investment process, the market will be setting the price. But how do you see market dynamics playing out because of the different, I guess, options that people can trade these coins? If they take physical delivery, if they leave them with an exchange or inside an exchange, where do you see some of that fluctuation coming from in terms of price discovery for these coins?
Yeah, great question. So there's basically three levels of secondary market. Our job is we're the primary dealer. So we sell at our website, for example, we're at diamondstandard.co. We're selling in the IPO. It's $5,000. That doesn't change during the IPO. After the IPO, our website will sell at the market fix. So you go to our website, it looks at the price on digital exchanges, the VWAP. So there's, you know, people can't stuff the clothes, for example. But whatever the VWAP is, someone can buy new coins at that VWAP. However, on a weekly basis, we hold a primary dealer auction where we have market makers and brokers who are basically buying coins on a weekly basis, and they bid for an allocation of new Diamond Standard coins at a discount to whatever the fix is. And this is very much like the treasury market auction. So that discount provides incentive to a market maker and broker who may be distributing the coins to funds or to wealth management clients, et cetera. So that's kind of where the price goes down. Where the price goes up is on the futures, for example. When you have a futures contract versus a spot contract, or spot commodity, there's always some kind of a spread. That spread comes from the time value of money, for example, because the futures won't be delivered for 30 days. Market makers work those spreads. So you have a market maker who may be working in digital exchanges and a market maker who may be a FCM or a commodities broker. So that will create a spread for institutional traders. The third one is for the ETF, which has not been approved yet. But the ETF, and we also expect there to be several exchange listed funds, which may be for accredited investors, very much like the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. We have one approved in Hong Kong. We're working on approval of one here in the States. Those funds are targeted to institutional investors who don't want to bother with the custody. And like the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, we expect those will trade at a small premium to the spot. And so that's a second opportunity for market participants to buy from the primary dealer, sell into a ETF or to a fund, hold it for 60 days, and then redeem it and earn that spread.
Okay, thanks for breaking that down, Cormac. Again, if anybody has any questions on any of these aspects, please email me. Let's also talk about the diamond market. Now, we have talked about how diamonds differ, and that was one of the arguments as to why it was hard to come up with kind of a pricing model or easy pricing model for diamonds. But it sounds like through your technology, you are creating very similar coins. A couple other arguments on the diamond market is that it has been, or at least was, very much a monopoly. And you also have to deal with some of what are called blood diamonds entering the market. How are you guys dealing with these two aspects?
Yeah, that's true. So first of all, the size of the market, I think, is very interesting. It's about $1.2 trillion above ground value of diamonds. And that's basically nearly all the diamonds that have been sold over the last 70 years or so, which is how long diamonds have really been popular. The new diamond production is actually only 1.2% of new diamonds. That's the stock to flow ratio. It's similar to gold. It's actually lower than gold. And they haven't, in fact, found a new diamond mine of any note in the last 20 some years. The last ones were up in your neighborhood, up in Canada. Of that market, about 0% are held by investors, compared to gold, where 30% of all the gold in the world is owned by investors. Gold is obviously a special case with central banks, but if you look at silver, platinum, and palladium, and rhodium even, investors own 15% of the supply, the available supply of all of those precious metals. But they own 0% of diamonds. So we believe that over time, and it takes 10 years, but we believe that investors will buy 15% of the diamonds. So that's kind of the demand side of it. On the supply side, you're correct. Diamonds used to be controlled by De Beers, but De Beers actually got broken up 25 years ago. And since then, they only supply about 22 to 24% of the rough diamonds. And as I mentioned, those rough diamonds are only 1.2% of the overall supply. Historically, diamonds have gone through about 5 to 6 hands between the mine to the wife. That's the cutters, the polishers, the dealers, brokers, importers, retailers, etc. So Diamond Standard, by creating a global digital exchange for loose diamonds, we're very much disintermediating that market and making it much more efficient for us to buy diamonds globally. Right now, we have 8 diamond buying offices around the world. We buy diamonds in every country where they're customly traded. That creates massive efficiency and allows us to reduce the intermediaries in the supply chain and lower the costs, not just for us, for also consumers. But I think the most interesting kind of change that we can expect is we believe that the diamond mines can't produce enough diamonds to supply the investor demand. So we expect that over time, the majority of our diamonds that get used in the commodity will actually be sourced from consumers. And we don't buy from consumers, but obviously our exchange is creating a transparent price discovery and global settlement and liquidity. So we believe a new class of diamond buyers will emerge who are buying massive amounts of diamonds from consumers at much, much more fair prices and then supplying those diamonds to us.
It sounds like that also opens up the selling aspect too. There can be more buyers, but then it also opens up individuals to sell their own diamonds at what they then think or should be more a fair price.
That's right. So because we provide liquidity for the diamond buyers, they'll be much, much more competitive. And the fee that you'll pay to sell your diamond will be much more like the fee you pay when you sell your gold, which is single digit percents. So by creating that liquidity and price transparency, we create much, much more fair prices for the consumers.
All right, Cormac, we're going to wrap it up here because that's a lot to take in, I think, for our listeners. This is a very interesting company and a very interesting strategy in terms of bringing diamonds to the market as a more investable, more open market, price discovery especially, too. So again, I will post a link to the Diamond Standard website. I'm also going to post an image of what these coins look like. They're very interesting looking with the diamonds and also with some of the other digital features to help the tracking and even storage of these coins. So if anybody has any follow-up questions, please email me, fleck@kereport. I'm going to follow up with Cormac in a couple weeks, get some more information out to everybody, and also update everybody on that IPO. Cormac, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for sharing some of the insights into Diamond Standard.
Thank you, Corey. Appreciate it.